Okay, we will hear argument next in number 22-1239, Spicer against McDonough. Ms. Burbank.
Good morning, and may it please the court. The Secretary and Mr. Spicer both agree that the statutory phrase resulting from means but-for causation. The panel below and the Secretary, however, define but-for causation too narrowly. And really, there's two errors here at issue. First, the Veterans Court has redefined but-for causation to require a positive mechanism that triggers the disease or the aggravation. And then second...
You mean the onset of it, the growth of it, as opposed to the non-diminution of it.
Or stopping of it, correct. Yes. The question is one of whether there has to be something that triggers it actively rather than an inability to act or a failure to act. The ability to see the difference between what this etiological nexus is that the Veterans Court imposes and how but-for causation generally works, you can see in not just veterans cases, but it may be helpful to take a very simple slip and fall type case, right? When you spill water in a grocery store and someone slips and falls, that is an action that causes the slip and fall. But also, if you fail to clear your sidewalk of ice and someone slips and falls on it, that is also a but-for cause. But-for causation doesn't make this distinction between a positive action and a negative action or an inability to act. And that's also clear in the OGC opinion, this obesity hypothetical that the OGC has created. There, the OGC and the Secretary has said that when a veteran cannot exercise and that induces obesity, and that obesity induces another disability, in the hypothetical there, hypertension, that can be the but-for causation. That causal chain is not broken just because part of it is an inability to act. The same thing happens here. Mr. Spicer, it is undisputed, has service-connected leukemia. It's also undisputed that his leukemia and the relating chemotherapy drugs have lowered his red blood cell count. And the ratio, the hematocrit, that's the ratio of red blood cells in the blood, is too low for him to get an operation on his knee. There's no dispute that if... That is still true today.
Okay.
He has leukemia and presumably for the rest of his life will be taking these chemotherapy drugs to manage that leukemia, but the leukemia is not gone. So because he was going in to get this surgery, because the hematocrit levels were so low, he could not have this surgery. There's no dispute, and as Judge Allen said, no dispute at all, that if it were not for his leukemia, he would have gotten this surgery. It is a but-for cause of the current condition of his knee. If not for his leukemia, he would have gotten the surgery. Now,
it may be premature, but has there been any dispute about assessing the likelihood of condition improvement if he got the surgery?
The VA never got there, right? The board said, as a matter of law, this is not part of a but-for causation chain, and therefore that factual question has not been resolved, and it would need to be resolved on remand. That is something...
And would you agree that the standard for recovery, that's for your client succeeding, would be that essentially more likely than not there would be a reduction in the functional impairment that constitutes the disability, not just that there's some, 25% chance of a reduction in the functional impairment that constitutes the disability?
Well, under the VA standard, I believe it would be as likely as not rather than
right.
more but likely than not.
Hovering around 50, right?
Right. And then one other caveat to that, it is not simply a question of whether there would have been improvement. There's also a question of whether since 2013, when he was going to go into the surgery, whether his knee condition has gotten worse. So even if it wouldn't have really improved his knee.
Is it timing a question about comparing the but-for world, which is always part of a but-for cause?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
So while we're sitting here in this particular issue, September 2013 was the date he was scheduled to have surgery on his knees, right?
I believe it was August, but
okay,
it's
August
right around
2013.
Yes.
It got canceled. If hypothetically his knee condition at that point in time, August of 2013, was say would have been rated something like a 20% disability or 30% disability, and now today his current condition is like 80% disability, would your recovery theory be I want that 50% in between the 80 and 30, or would you want the entire 80? And would you want it only beginning from the date of the canceled surgery, August 2013? Or do you want to go further behind that date? Those are two questions.
Let me answer the second one first, because I think it's an easier, cleaner answer. No, not before the date of that surgery, because that's when the leukemia becomes part of that causal chain. Right? He has arthritis that is not service-connected, is not related to service. You know, when it's a minor problem, but when it gets to the point where he would have surgery, and the leukemia prevents that treatment, that's when it should be service connected. Your first question, Your Honor, relates to what the delta would be, and I want to make sure I understand the hypothetical correctly. The amount of the rating that should be granted is the delta between what would have occurred if he had had the surgery. I'm not sure if Your Honor was saying that it would have been 20 to 30% after the surgery, or if you're saying he was 20 to 30% before the surgery when he was going to go in for the surgery.
Mine is maybe a different question, which is before the surgery, he would have been rated at a certain disability level.
Right.
Let's say 30%. But he never got the surgery. And now today, it's gotten worse, and it's at 80%. So in view of that, would Mr. Spicer be seeking from the VA benefits for 50% of the delta between the two, or is it the full 80%?
It's only the delta between what he currently experiences and what would have happened with surgery. So if surgery would have just halted the knee progression, then it would be that 50%. But if the surgery would have made him, you know.
So in your world, it doesn't matter what his condition was at the time of his surgery. What matters is what is the condition right now and what would it have been post-surgery.
Right. It may be useful to see what his condition was right before surgery to have an understanding or to make that factual finding of what likely would have happened if he had received the surgery, but there's just no evidence in the record, and I couldn't speculate as to what.
I think in your briefing, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I think in your briefing you were suggesting that there are other situations in VA claim benefits land where there's other hypotheticals that the VA has to undertake in terms of trying to decide on how much to grant on a claim. Can you tease that out one more time here? That's something that's analogous to the kind of hypotheticals you're asking the VA to undertake here?
Absolutely. Under Section 1151 claims, the VA is required to...
This is the VA medical negligence.
Exactly. The VA is required to assess what would have happened had there been the appropriate medical care compared to what exists now. And that's almost identical as here. Of course, that's not strictly speaking service connection, but the analysis is the same. On the flip side, sort of the other side of the coin, VA also has to evaluate when a diagnostic code requires it. This isn't necessarily in our briefing. I don't believe it came up below. But another hypothetical, for Your Honor, is when the VA is required to assess the ameliorative effects of medication on a condition and what would exist without that medication. It has to do that in diagnosing and giving readings on a regular basis. So this is not...
In those two scenarios that you talked about, do you look at the veterans, when you're doing the delta, are you looking at the veterans' condition at the time of determining the remedy, or are you looking at it at the time that the condition occurred, or that the, for the medical negligence, do you look at the condition at the time that the negligence occurred, or like 5 years later?
Well, it depends on when the rate, as with all ratings can increase if things get worse. So it depends on when the claim is submitted, but it would be between the time when the current situation, what the present condition of the veteran's disease or injury, and what would have happened at that time, what they would have at this present time if they had gotten the appropriate medical care. I'm not sure if that was the cleanest answer.
Well, I understand. You're saying this is something that would have to be handled on remand, and there's been no work done on that at this
Absolutely.
Time.
There would have to be evidence and presumably medical expert evidence on what likely would have happened.
And right now, the only purpose for this discussion, as occurred below, is simply conjecture or argument that it's too complicated to determine, so that helps support the government's position.
The only analysis that happened at the board level was this is not, there was no discussion of the policy argument of speculation, as I recall. It was just, this is not, as a matter of law, something that can be in the causal chain. And that is really all that has been done by the VA. There's been no analysis.
I could be wrong, but I thought there was some discussion in the opinion.
In the opinion,
just
simply yes.
Saying that, the fact that this would be so complicated to determine suggests that we should, it supports our interpretation of the statute. I thought that's what they said.
Yes, that's correct. It's in the opinion below. I know I'm in my rebuttal time, but I do want to just briefly state that the second issue here is that what VA has done is import the standard from 1153, the natural progression restriction on aggravation in 1153 that is not in...
Under the regs, is your claim a 3.310B claim or a 3.310A claim?
A B claim, I believe, yes.
Oh, so your theory is aggravation? All...
That delta that we're talking about is an aggravation. The distinction between aggravation and onset is one that's created by the regulation. But to the extent the regulation...
This debate we've been having about section 1110, it's not about the disability resulting from language, it's about the other... Next clause that talks about aggravation?
No, so the next clause, the aggravation that's discussed in 1110 says aggravation of a pre-existing condition, and then 1153 further clarifies that there's a presumption for those aggravation claims. 3.3110 is not about the aggravation of pre-existing conditions. It is.
I guess what I'm wondering is if we were to conclude that disability resulting from, as that term, as that phrase is used in section 1110, means but for causation in what I'll just say the traditional historical sense, and is therefore something broader than mere etiological nexus, then is that the end of the case? Then we have to remand, or do we have to go the next step for your purposes and actually address the validity and invalidity of 3.310B?
The first holding would be all that's necessary. There is no additional requirement of assessing whether what the definition of disability is. It's really just about resulting from. The issue is just that 3.3110B has a clause that says, and not due to the natural progression of the disease, that sort of again, is doing right. That narrowing work.
But I guess I was under the impression that your secondary service connection theory was more under A and not B. But now you're telling me it's actually D.
So A, let me pull up the language. A deals with a disability that is due to or the result of service-connected disease, but then B is aggravation of non-service-connected disabilities, which Mr. Spicer's knee arthritis was non-service-connected. It was not, is not related to service until such time as the leukemia prevented treatment. So the aggravation, it's just a terminology for that, that delta that we're talking about. It's not the entire disability that needs to be service.
If we ignore 3.310B, just set that aside for a minute. You agree, though, that Section 3.310A covers Mr. Spicer's situation, right? Because it says disability which is proximately due or the result of a service-connected disease. I believe you think that that theory covers Mr. Spicer. That language covers Mr. Spicer.
You yes, know, right? Yes. Insofar as it mirrors that 1110 language,
right.
And 1131. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I see I'm now over my time, so I will.
Well, we will reserve,
thank
I mean,
you.
Restore the time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Carhart.
May it please the court. I will begin where my friend Ms. Burbank left off. Which is this distinction between 3.310A and 3.310B. VA's position is that what Ms.
Can I ask you to begin actually on the statute? I'm not sure that you've really made an argument even that the that if you're wrong about the statute, the regulation nevertheless precludes the claim.
Sure. So the statute has a conception of but-for causation. 1110 distinguishes between resulting from and talks about disability resulting from an injury incurred in service and then talks about aggravation of a pre-existing injury. The
right,
VA...
We don't have a case of aggravation of a pre-existing
correct.
Injury. Right?
Correct. So the VA interpreted and implemented the first part of 1110 by creating a framework for secondary service connection. And it did so in 3.310. So the two components of secondary service connection are set forth in subsection A of the regulation and subsection B of the regulation. So in the VA's view, both of those are different forms of causation, as the Veterans Court explained. But there's a critical distinction between them in that A refers to the onset of a disease and doesn't require the subtraction of the natural progress.
Unless you're wrong about saying that A refers only to the onset, which in ordinary but-for causation world with a understanding the definition of disability to be a functional impairment, it's just not limited to the onset. If it's worse now than it would have been in the absence of the military service, then it results that the current worst condition is a result of. Is that
so? That elides the distinction between causation and aggravation. Elides the fact that aggravation is a particular type of causation,
What kind of aggravation are you talking about? We're not talking about aggravation of a pre-service condition.
Correct.
Right. So you want to? Isn't that what does 1110? How does 1110 use the word aggravation?
1110 talks about aggravation of a pre-existing.
Right. So this is not that.
Correct.
So why doesn't a current functional impairment, I keep using that term because we've defined disability to mean that, if that resulted from the service, resulted in the ordinary but-for causation sense, that it would not be as bad as it now is in the absence of the service, why aren't we done?
So if you look at the Veterans Court's definition of result, which is the word here, the Veterans Court relied on the Barrage Supreme Court decision, which defined result in terms of arise, The Veterans Court similarly looked at words like...
I thought you don't contest, and that Barrage is among a number of cases that say that in the absence of something special, words like a result and arise mean but for causation and nothing more. Nothing further is required. And you haven't said in your brief that more than but for causation is required. Am I right about that?
In terms of the issues before this court, that's correct. 3.310B does have a proximate cause requirement, but that wasn't addressed by the Veterans Court, so it's not properly before this court. We agree with that. We're talking about but-for causation in this appeal, so we definitely agree with that.
Right, so just I keep returning to this very simple-minded point that if the functional impairment today would not be as severe in the absence of service as it is, then the service is a but-for cause of the current state of the functional impairment. That's but-for cause.
Our response is that but-for cause actually looks at the onset of the disease, and the reason for that is the definitions employed by the Supreme Court and relied upon by the Veterans Court, which look at how a disease arose. So if you're talking about arising, if you're talking about proceeding from, you're looking at the chronological relationship between the disability and the service-connected disease. Our point is that the
we're having a little debate here about what but-for causation means. Your theory seems to be it has to be tied to the onset of the disability.
That's correct.
And as I understand the statute, disability resulting from, the term disability, as we've all interpreted it as the present day disability, not the onset of said disability, as that term disability is used in 1110. Is that right?
The present day disability is the disability. That's right.
Right. So that takes care of that issue. Then a way of translating 1110 is the present day disability resulting from is another way to think about the statute. So what is the cause of the present day disability? We're looking at the current condition of the functional impairment. And if that's the case, then classic but for language, but for some action having occurred, would we still have this result? I mean, there would be a lot of different actions that took place along the way, but one of them seems to be the fact that Mr. Spicer has undergone chemotherapy and it's done something to his red blood cell count that makes him no longer eligible for surgery to correct his knee disability.
So our response to that is that the but-for causation contemplated by Congress distinguished between onset and worsening.
Where in the statute do you see that?
We see that in 1110. When it talks about the distinction between disabilities resulting from or aggravation of a pre-existing...
But aggravation is pre-existing. It's limited to a particular thing, pre-existing. Unlike
right.
the regulation, it doesn't say any aggravation. It says pre-existing. So it's limited.
Right. Agree. The Veterans Court, or excuse me, the VA had to translate that through 3.10B, through the regulation, to a situation where you have a worsening disease. So in other words, Congress contemplated a distinction generally between onset of disease and worsening of disease.
So in your view, because the statute refers to aggravation of a pre-existing disease, pre-existing service, that means that resulting from has a more circumscribed meaning.
That's correct. And in the sense that the VA then had to translate resulting from...
Well, let's set aside. We're just looking at the statute.
Well,
understood. I'm trying to understand.
Understood.
You're trying to use the regulation to support your interpretation of the statute. I understand. But I want to understand what, just looking at the language of 1110, what it is you're relying on. And what I hear you saying, correct me if I'm wrong, I just want to make sure I understand your argument, is that because it talks about aggravation of pre-existing, we should interpret that to mean that any aggravation is limited or that resulting from doesn't include aggravation of any condition?
The first step is that there's a distinction between resulting from an aggravation, understanding that the aggravation is talking about pre-existing conditions in that context. The second step is then getting to secondary service connection, which is not explicitly addressed in 1110. And the VA had to come up with a framework for secondary service connection that's consistent with the statutory framework generally, which distinguishes between resulting from and aggravation. So the point is...
Aggravation of a pre-existing injury.
That's right. The point is, though, that the type of situation that is arising here with Mr. Spicer is presents the same sorts of concerns as aggravation of a pre-existing injury does, in that you have an injury that rose...
Would you agree that etiological nexus, medical cause of something, is a narrower conception of but-for causation than but-for causation as understood by the Supreme Court?
Well...
I just need an answer to that question.
I'm not sure what etiological cause means exactly. The Veterans Court seemed to define it in terms of the onset of the disease.
Right.
And that seems like, that in our view is consistent with the distinction between causation and aggravation, or the distinction that Congress draws in 1110. So in that sense, we would defend a definition of causation.
Your general definition for but-for causation, one that uses the words but-for in it?
The Veterans Court. So this doesn't use the word, but well, this is the barrage. It's at Appendix 7.
Not the Veterans Court.
Excuse me, the Supreme
Court.
It's at Appendix 7. It's the barrage case. And what we're relying on.
And so, what is that definition?
The
but-for definition using the words but-for by the Supreme Court?
In the usual, the last sentence, which proceeds from a couple other sentences, is in the usual course, this requires proof that the harm would not have occurred in the absence of, that is, but-for, the thing from which it purportedly results.
Does that fit Mr. Spicer's situation?
Well, if you look at the earlier explanation,
I know you've got other arguments, but just broadly speaking, just based on that sentence, based on that definition of but-for causation, and we all agree but-for causation applies to the term disability resulting from in Section 1110. Mr. Spicer's story, Mr. Spicer's theory of how his service-connected leukemia and subsequent necessary chemotherapy treatments have interfered with his ability to get any kind of corrective surgery on his knees, just broadly speaking, I know you've got other arguments, would that fit under that definition of but-for that you just quoted from the Supreme Court?
Your question, Judge Chen, turns on how you define harm. If you think of the harm in the sentence I just read as the current state of the harm, then that supports Mr. Spicer's position.
But don't we have to do that? Because the word harm is not in the statute. So the substitute in the statute for harm is disability. Disability is functional impairment, which is measured today, compared not to some other thing. So the question is whether the current state of functional impairment would be what it was in the absence of the thing that is alleged to be the cause, which in this case is military service.
So, again, the disability is the current state of the impairment. The question, though, goes to the disease that's claimed to be the cause of that disability.
Isn't that contrary to what I took to be established in our precedent, and I don't think you dispute this, that disability is functional impairment. It's not the underlying disease that causes the functional impairment. It is the functional impairment.
Right, and the way that issue arises is in a framework that distinguishes between how that disability was caused and how and whether it was aggravated. In other words, that issue does come up, and we're not talking about the disability. We're not quibbling or disputing the definition of the word disability. We're saying that there is a well-established distinction between onset and aggravation that is applied elsewhere, and it was reasonable for the best reading of 1110 when the VA has to think about how to come up with a framework for secondary service connection that accommodates the same concerns that Congress explicitly recognized with respect to pre-existing or injuries or diseases. And those same concerns arise in the case of a disease or injury that arises after service. It was reasonable for the VA to import that same. It was the best reading of the VA. We say, you know, we rely on Chevron. We note Chevron, but we say we have the best reading of the statute to try to make secondary service connection harmonious with the framework Congress set out. Because I just read from this passage, just as a housekeeping matter, the Veterans Court decision, or the Veterans Court quotation from Barrage, does have language that's not in Barrage itself, as far as we could tell. The block quote starting from namely to condition, that language seems to have been a supplement from the Veterans Court. I just want to make that crystal clear because I read from that block quote. There are other contexts.
Can I just ask you, my recollection is that your brief spends a lot of time suggesting, I'm not quite sure what the right verb is, that there's something very, very odd about talking about what might have been, about speculative possibilities. And I kept reading that and thinking, that's the very definition of but-for cause. It is, but for this, what would the world have looked like? It's baked in. The speculation about a world that does not in fact exist is baked into the inquiry. So I found it very odd to read all of the assertions that there's something extremely strange about considering the way the world would have been but is not in fact. Can you help me understand that?
The distinction we were drawing, Your Honor, is between, on one hand, the typical type of causation analysis that's done, which is, a knee injury arises in service and later presents as a knee disability. And there's medical knowledge connecting the presence of a previous knee injury with a later knee disability. So that's an inference that can be drawn based on the medical evidence. It is different to speculate how a surgery would have turned out, which isn't really an inference, but is what the Veterans Court described at Appendix 9.
Right, but your position, and I think the Veterans Court and Board's position, is that even if it were 100% certain that the medical intervention that the service precluded would completely cure this other condition, so it's a pill, or not just surgery, or it's a surgery like many knee replacement surgeries that has an extremely high rate of condition improvement success, that doesn't matter, just off the table in terms of but-for causation.
Well, the first point is, if the court agrees with the distinction between onset and aggravation, which is the framework that the Veterans Court was applying, you also have to think about the natural progress of the disease. So that has to be subtracted. And oftentimes that's going to, in a case like this, where you're talking about affirmative medical intervention, that's going to be dispositive of the issue. Because you're talking about the natural progress of the disease, so affirmative medical intervention isn't encompassed within that. More generally, the closer you get to 100%, the stronger the argument that Mr. Spicer would have. All we have before on this record is at Appendix 33.
Right, that's what I think we were talking in Ms. Burbank's argument about this is an issue for remand, whether she can meet the hovering around 50% likelihood standard that prevails in the veteran system for resolving the factual contention about how things would have been in the absence of the service.
So what the board's framework for looking at this was at Appendix 33. And so what the board says is, while the record reflects a canceled knee replacement in 2013, the record doesn't reflect any proximate aggravation or worsening beyond natural progression of the veteran's knee arthritis by leukemia. So the veterans court was, or excuse me, the board was saying you have to look at how the knee injury would have developed naturally. And with that framework, which is the 3.310B framework, there's no compensable aggravation. Happy to address any other questions that might have.
Thank you for your argument. Ms. Burbank, you have the 5 minutes back, I guess.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me start where my learned colleague left off, which is citing the board decision. I just want to clarify that talking about the board's application and looking at the natural progress of the disease is because the board is required to follow the regulation at issue here, the 3.3110, saying that the natural progress of the disease prevents looking at the causal chain here. So when we're talking about what the statute means, the fact that the board applied the statute is really neither here nor there. I also want to address the contention that but-for causation means onset. And I think that's distinguished between causation and what the definition of disability is, and I just want to affirm that Mr. Spicer's position is that the disability means the current state of his condition, the functional impairment as it exists today, and therefore you can have multiple but-for causes. There's multiple things in that stream. So the fact that we're looking at just the delta between what would have happened and with surgery and what he has today, even though his arthritis didn't start because of service, still is within that but-for causation, that natural term, as defined by the Supreme Court in Burrage. And just to talk a little bit about Burrage, in that case,
the block quote that the government quoted for but-for causation from Burrage, it does speak in terms of give rise to or bring about, and what are we supposed to do about that? I mean, that sort of suggests maybe, just maybe, when we think about but-for causation, we ought to be thinking about but-for causation in the sense of what brought about the current condition.
Again, that's, again, thinking about whether the
rather
onset...
Rather than cutting off the entire story up to the present day and just looking at the present day.
Again, the but-for causation, the distinction here is whether there's an action or an inaction, and that's really not discussed in Burrage. Burrage is talking about whether when there are multiple sort of things that make it unclear what the cause of death was, right? That there it was a mandatory minimum sentence if there's a death from providing heroin to someone. And there was evidence on the record trying to determine whether it was a but-for cause, and there was a jury instruction saying, well, if it contributed at all to the death, then this mandatory minimum applies. And the Supreme Court says, no, you need a but-for causation. We need to know that but for the heroin, there would or would not have been this death. Here, the issue is whether but for Mr. Spicer's leukemia, he would have his current knee condition. And there is no dispute that he would have had this surgery if not for his hematocrit levels. So it is not the sole cause, but that is not but-for causation. But-for causation does not require a single but-for cause. There is the fact that he has knee arthritis that's non-service connected, and then also the fact that he is unable to get this treatment. And the idea that the effects of treatment are part of that causal link or just are not at issue here. That's sort of rote for the VA to understand that medicine and an intervening medical treatment can be part of what the current disability is.
Can I double check something with you? You're not relying on the, the one contemporary view called loss of opportunity in tort law, which says that even if there's, a 20% chance that some improvement would have occurred, you can recover for the loss of the opportunity for the 20% chance.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
No, Your
Honor. I suppose if Mr. Spicer, due to his inability to get a knee surgery, that led to other health complications. Maybe he was wheelchair bound and I don't know, maybe developed obesity and diabetes and several other maladies. All of those would be part of a causal chain that goes back to his service-connected leukemia, in your view?
Under Payne v. Wilkie, I think that would be, a factual question to really know that there is that full causal chain. But yes, it is possible, right? In Payne v. Wilkie, the court determined that the causal chain in that case can be something like an inability to exercise leads to obesity, leads to erectile dysfunction because of that obesity, and that erectile dysfunction can be can be service connected all the way back to that original. I believe in that case it was hand and upper arm extremity disability. So an inability to exercise leads, and there's a downstream chain. So yes, there can be this longer chain, but here the chain is pretty simple. It's really that he was going to get this treatment and could not because of his leukemia. And the last thing I want to say, and I know I've run over my time, so if I may.
Depends how long it is.
I will keep it short, Your Honor. I just want to clarify that the 3.3110 language of aggravation is the VA using a term of aggravation to distinguish between onset and when we're talking about that delta. That's not the same aggravation that's reflected in 1110 and 1131, because that is pre-existing injuries. And with that, Mr. Spicer respectfully requests that this court reverse and remand for further fact development.
Thanks all counsel for the arguments, and the case is submitted.